Welcome to episode 410 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And this is a show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Well, Richard, this is your second week in a row, right?
It is.
I was thinking it was last week that you weren't here, but it was 2 weeks ago that you weren't here.
It is. I'm going to make a trend of this.
Well, that's good, because my life is ridiculous right now, and I can't even keep things like when you were last on the show straight. So that would really help me out. You know what would also help me out, Richard?
Some listener feedback?
Exactly. If our listeners would send us some feedback, that would be really, really nice. But they're breaking my heart, and we have no feedback tonight. Maybe they don't want to send any feedback because they want shorter shows. But I doubt it.
Wow. I hope that's not the case. I might take that a little bit personally. But we do have a lot to go over, right?
We do. A lot more than I think we both expected that we would be covering tonight. But we've got some pretty cool news to kick everything off tonight. And that is the latest announcement from Plex. They have made a fairly significant update to their DVR functionality. Just to give a little bit of a recap on where we were prior to this announcement, Plex rolled out DVR capability last year. It runs on pretty much anything that'll run Plex DVR, or sorry, the Plex server, but there are some limitations. You could only control everything, like scheduling recordings and viewing the program guide and all that stuff, from the Plex web app. You can't do it from mobile apps, you can't do it from your Xbox, you can't do it from your iPhone, Android, none of that stuff. There was also no live TV, which is kind of weird for a DVR, but it generally worked for the most part, not always entirely for you, but we'll get to that in a little bit. And what they've announced in just the last few days is that really two things. Their big announcement is they've got live TV working. The other announcement is that some of this control stuff is now available on things other than just the web interface. It's not exactly the platforms that I would have expected to be first. They are Android TV and iOS, but not Apple TV, right?
Yeah, not really any of the common Plex 10-foot apps, except for Android TV.
Right. Not regular Android, just Android TV, which basically means if you're running it on an NVIDIA Shield TV or one of the lesser Android TV devices, I suppose, and this is really just the client side, then you do get the ability to view the program guide, schedule recordings, view what's scheduled to record, change priorities. All of the stuff, basically, that you were able to do from the web interface, you can now do with a remote control if you've got an Android TV. It's probably going to come to other things soon, but they're not announcing dates on anything. I specifically asked them about the Xbox One, obviously, and they just said they're working on it. So that's most of the good news. They're also supporting more tuners now. It's more than just the Silicon Dust tuners. This also, oddly enough, maybe not so oddly, includes the tuner that was released specifically for the Xbox One that probably hardly anyone uses anymore, because I think most people bought the TV tuner for their Xbox One expecting there to eventually be DVR functionality, and that never came and is probably never going to come.
Now you have it.
Well, yeah, you sort of have. Like, I want to be really careful because some people were saying that. Like, now you've got DVR on your Xbox. Well, not if you mean that your Xbox is the DVR. And that's right. Not the case here. You still have to be running the DVR on another machine because the Xbox doesn't run as a Plex Media server.
Right.
It's just the client.
Right.
So now you can control all this stuff from an Android TV and iOS devices, and you've got live TV. So all of that sounds really, really, really great. Then I went to try it out. And some of it is, okay? So like the DVR control stuff, as in scheduling and managing recordings, all of that stuff does work really well on Android TV. I was happy with it. Live TV, on the other hand, if all you care about is actual live TV, it's fine. I don't really have any complaints. But when I think about live TV on a DVR platform, I assume a couple of things. I assume that means that I can pause live TV.
Nope.
And then I can rewind it.
Nope.
Or that I can schedule something to record and start watching it 20 minutes after it started so I can fast forward through commercials.
Yeah, now that you're supposed to be able to do. So I'm kind of confused why that isn't working. And I haven't had a chance to test this out myself, but that was part of their announcement.
It was?
I thought it was.
I didn't think it was. Maybe I misread it, but I didn't think that was in there. And the main reason for that is if you schedule a recording, it still doesn't show up in your library until it's completed recording. I can try more tests, I suppose, but when I was trying this out, things still weren't showing up in the library until they were done.
You know what it is? It's probably not. It's probably more nuanced / less capable than what we're really hoping for. What you said is you record something and then you want to start watching it with something of a lag, right? And I think what they said you can do is watch something while it's recording. So the thing that we need to be really clear about here is there is no buffer, period. That is the underlying Correct. Reason for all of these limitations that you've talked about. There is no constant recording or playback buffer going on while it's doing this stuff.
Right. So, yes, you can watch something while it's recording, but you have to be watching it live. So, I believe the night this came out was the first night of the NBA Finals. I turned that on, I hit record, and yes, I was able to watch it while it was recording, but I couldn't pause or do anything like that. So, yeah, there you go.
Now, I mean, presumably that's something they could add, right? They've been constantly improving the DVR capabilities over the course of the last 6 months while we've been testing it out in beta. As far as I know, they're still referring to this as beta, even though it is in the main branch that everybody with Plex Pass gets.
I think you're right that they are still calling it beta, because it's definitely not done, and they know it. And you're right. The important thing to remember here is they keep making updates. They're not calling this a completed project. They're continuing to work on it. They're going to continue to roll this out to more client platforms like Windows and Xbox and probably Roku and, you know, the million other platforms that they support. It's going to hit all of that stuff. And I fully expect them to eventually support having that live buffer and watching things while you're recording them, but picking them up in the middle, but starting from the beginning. You know, all of the crazy things that we're used to doing with our DVR, I fully expect Plex to be able to do them eventually. It's just not quite there yet. So I'm happy with where this is going, but if you're looking for a DVR solution to give to your not so technically inclined friends, this isn't it yet, but maybe someday.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but let's be serious. I mean, I think that Plex in general is never going to appeal to a general audience. It's more of a tech savvy or kind of tech interested kind of person who's going to be using something like Plex, who's going to have a network tuner. I mean, these things aren't just your every person technology, and that's fine. I think there's a good enough market there. And the fact that they continue to fill the gaps left by other products is great. You know, if they can make this ultimately one of the most feature-rich and easy-to-use DVR products that's available over a network, to watch on all of your different devices, that fills a big gap. And I think that's a great thing.
Absolutely. There's one more thing that I wanted to point out before we left this topic, because I've heard this not so clearly talked about on other podcasts and things. Cable card is supported. It's been supported ever since the DVR functionality rolled out for Plex. But it's really, really important to know that it only works on channels that are not copy protected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to come down to your individual cable provider. Richard, you have Fios. They hardly protect anything.
Right.
Like HBO is about the only thing that gets protected with your Fios. With my cable provider, when I had cable, most of the channels that I cared about were copy protected. NBC Sports, Fox Sports One, all of those things were copy protected. The networks weren't, ABC, NBC, that sort of thing. But you're going to need to know what those copy protection limitations are before jumping whole hog into this, because you might not be able to record anything depending on your specific cable provider.
Well, before we leave this, let me talk a little bit about the iOS experience, because I gave this a try. I was very excited about this. And one of the things that I think is worth noting is that in addition to the live TV capability and the ability to watch recorded television, this is really adding all of that new interface, all of those new capabilities into the iOS app as it is on the Android TV app. So the way that they implemented this, I think, is a little bit, I'll say interesting. It's a little bit different than what you might expect in a normal program guide, in a normal means of recording shows. Essentially, if I go and look at the program guide, what I'm looking at is, for what's now, a list of all my channels, but as thumbnails of whatever's on each channel right now. And I have like 1,000 channels.
Right, because you have cable card.
Right, right. And a lot of them are SD, and I haven't gone through and disabled the SD channels yet, which I'll need to do. But there is no filtering of the what's on now list of stuff. So I can't just say, only show me HD stuff. Or I can't just say, only show me movies that are on right now. Or only, you know, whatever, you know, whatever way that I might want to filter that out by category or rating or quality or whatever. That just isn't possible. And so I'm hoping that's something they're going to look at adding in the future, because you can do that on most DVRs. Then with stuff that's coming up, what you get is a list that by default is sorted alphabetically. So you have initially hundreds of programs that start with numbers. Again, all tiles of whatever those programs are. And you have to wade through all of that. And I know from watching my guide download that I have something like 100,000 program entries in my guide. So granted, a lot of them are repeats, but that means that there's a lot of stuff there. And so we really need to come up with better ways of wading through that. Those can be sorted. They can be filtered. But the filters aren't on stuff like what's HD or what's the rating. And so those types of things really need to be added in, I think, in order to make the discovery of content useful. The thing that I do and still will continue to do, even if I now initiate programs on my iOS tablet instead of on the web, is I just search for the program name. I search for something that I want, and in the results, if it finds it in the guide, then you can record it there. I think that's going to be the best way to do it, because otherwise, I just don't know how this presentation of guide data is really manageable with large numbers of channels.
Yeah, that's some good feedback to give back to the Plex team. But I have to imagine that they're experiencing similar situations.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so Richard, we are doing something a little bit different than we've done, you know, in the long past. We're doing the show live, but we're now using Mixer It used to be called Beam. Now it's called Mixer, and it's awesome, and it's lots of fun, and it has a chat room, so people can join us while we're recording the show and chat along with us and give us their feedback in real time while we record. So come along, join the ride with us. We typically do this Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, but we're always going to tweet about when we will be recording the show. And that you can find by following our Twitter account at DigiMediaZone. All right, well, let's move on to some audio news. We don't always have audio news, but tonight we do, and it's for one of my favorite audio services. That is SoundCloud. They have finally released their own official app for both the Xbox One and Windows 10, and it's pretty stinking nice, Richard. I actually haven't gotten to play this on my Xbox One, but I did use it on my Windows 10 PC today, and I really liked it. It's really pretty. It works as you would expect. It's SoundCloud. You know, you do need to have an account with SoundCloud, but there's like, I have a free account. You don't have to be a paid subscriber to SoundCloud to use this. You just have to have an account and log in. No big deal.
I wonder why that is. I mean, you don't have to do that on the web.
That's true. But I think maybe because you're going to get a far, like, I think you're more likely to use an app like this to listen to things that you know you want to listen to. So like artists that you've followed and things like that, where like, if I'm listening just on the web, it's probably because I did some sort of search and just ended up on somebody's page. Like, I'm not one to typically go to SoundCloud and then, you know, just kind of browse around. Yep. Maybe some people do, but I kind of know what I'm looking for
right. When
I get there. And so I just follow those artists.
Yep.
And so if you've done the same thing, this works really well. And it's not as basic as you might expect, especially for what they're definitely calling a beta version of an app. Like, if you're following an artist, you can listen to all of their tracks, obviously, but you can also listen to like things that they've reposted from other musicians. Like, there's a lot of options in here for kind of digging yourself down the music hole, to the discovery hole, I suppose. And then on the Xbox side, it very importantly does support background audio playback. You can pin playlist, which is really awesome. So just pin your favorite artist. On the Xbox, you can use Cortana for telling it to play and pause and skip tracks. So overall, like, I have no complaints with this app right now. I'm really, really liking it a lot. And the next time I actually find time to play my Xbox, I'm going to download this app and listen to some of my favorite artists while I'm playing other games.
That's nice. That's cool. That's really nice. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that they did a good job with it. And is the interface more like Xbox stuff, or does it look kind of more generic like it might be on other platforms?
That's a good question. I think it's probably more generic like other platforms. But when we say that, that also means that it kind of looks like the way Windows 10 is going. Like, at Build a couple weeks ago, Microsoft talked about their new Fluent design language. It looks pretty fluent-y, which means it looks a lot like a lot of other modern things.
Fluent, just like everyone else.
Kinda, yeah.
Yep.
So it's pretty. I like it. It doesn't look like just a bunch of square icons and a grid across the screen.
That's cool. As you're talking about nice. That and saying that you can control it with Cortana, the one thing that I started thinking about is like, wow, it's pretty nice that right away they have support for Cortana. And then I'm thinking, I wonder if that has anything to do with, like, as these services are building UWPs and working toward getting on the Microsoft platform, if they're also thinking about control through Cortana speakers, like if that's something that we might see as one of the services available on a Cortana speaker. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, this would be a fantastic app for a Cortana speaker. That this is exactly the sort of thing that I would want to be doing with a Cortana-enabled speaker. Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like it. So, that's it for our audio news. Let's get into our gaming news. The gaming news is actually fairly light this week, which is very, very expected because next week is E3. E3 is, of course, the biggest conference of the year for the video game industry. And we expect lots of big announcements from Microsoft, including all of the details about the Project Scorpio device that will be coming out this fall. So the important things to know are, when can you watch Microsoft's press briefing, and where and how, and all of that good stuff. And they put out a nice little blog post that gives you all of that information.
And so the answer is, it's pretty much everywhere.
Oh my gosh, is it everywhere? You're not kidding. So their press briefing is this Sunday. That's right. They're not doing it on Monday. Instead, they moved it up a day. It's Sunday, June 11th at 5 p.m. Eastern. Here's the really, really cool thing, Richard. This year, because they're doing so much 4K gaming, they're broadcasting this in 4K.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So to watch it in 4K, you need to have an Xbox One S, and then you just open up the Mixer app, and it's going to be broadcasting in 4K through Mixer. Now, maybe you don't have a 4K TV and you don't care, or maybe you're going to be out and about. There's no shortage of ways to watch this, guys. It's going to be on Twitch. It's going to be on YouTube. It's going to be on Twitter and Facebook Live. It's going to be everywhere. There's no reason not to be able to watch this unless you just don't have time to watch it. So check that out at 5 p.m. Eastern time this Sunday. And then they're also going to do like what they did last year and have daily live shows. These are all an hour long, just kind of catching up with the latest news. They tend to interview game developers and stuff about their new gaming announcements across the platform. They're always interesting. They're also talking about having contests throughout all of these episodes. And they will be daily Monday through Thursday at various times. Mondays at 6 p.m., Tuesday and Wednesday at 4 p.m., and Thursdays at 1 p.m. All of those times are Eastern, so translate them into your time zone. And then they're all going to be available in the same places as the main press briefing. So Mixer, Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook Live, everywhere. Close your eyelids. It'll probably be on the back of your eyelids. It's everywhere. So no reason to miss any of Microsoft's coverage from E3 next year. It'll be available everywhere. And most especially, it'll be here on Entertainment 2.0. Next week, we will be covering all of it, of course. All right. There's one other like actual newsy thing in the gaming space this week, and that is that Seagate has released a new version of their Xbox Game Drive. This is an external hard drive specifically designed for using with an Xbox. What does that mean in terms of like internals and all that stuff? I don't think it means anything. I think that this is just a regular Seagate external hard drive in a pretty fancy case that matches your Xbox. And that may sound silly, but if you're going to be plugging extra boxes into your gaming console that's in your living room where everybody can see it, you at least want it to look nice. And if you've got a white Xbox One S, these new drives, they look darn nice. They're white, just like the Xbox One S. They've got a really pretty Xbox logo on the front of them that's done in the same way that it appears on the front of the Xbox One S console. They're also offering these in two size options, a 2 terabyte model and a 4 terabyte model. And here's the cool thing. We talked recently about Xbox One or Xbox Game Pass, that new subscription service that allows you access to a library of over 100 games to play whenever you want for $9.99 a month. Well, if you buy the 2 terabyte version of this new Seagate game drive, it will include a 1 month subscription to Xbox Game Pass. And if you buy the 4 terabyte model, it comes with a 2 month subscription. So start filling those drives up with a bunch of free games, essentially.
That's a really cool way of bundling that together. I think that's very clever.
Yeah, it's such a smart idea. It's so smart. Because I think a lot of people, when they saw the Xbox Game Pass, they were like, I want this, but I don't have room for all of these games. So yeah. here's how you solve that problem. So then, of course, you want to know, when can you get it and how much will you have to pay? Well, they're coming out July 7th, so just about a month away. And the 2 terabyte version is going to be $89.99. The 4 terabyte version is $129.99. So you're paying a little bit more for these than you might just a run-of-the-mill external hard drive, but not really that much more, like maybe just a few bucks. And they match your console if you have an Xbox One S. So, and they include, you know, $10 or $20 worth of Xbox Game Pass. So I think it probably makes up the difference if you're looking for some extra storage for your Xbox.
I'm not convinced that these really are priced at that much of a premium. I mean, $130 for a 4 terabyte USB powered mini external hard drive seems like a really good price.
It seems pretty reasonable to me.
Yeah, the only thing that concerns me is that it's Seagate.
Yeah, I don't know how they've been doing over the last few years. In the late aughts, they weren't doing all that great, but that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I had in the early 10s an external power brick powered Seagate drive that crashed on me, and that was roughly around the time, like you said, at the end of the aughts. They had some problems with drives, and that was it for me. I wasn't going to be using any more Seagate drives. So I'm just, you know, I'm not inclined to buy something that has failed on me and has had such consistent failure problems. They may have worked through a lot of their issues. And if I remember correctly, I think Seagate and another drive company, I don't know if it was Toshiba or whom, ended up merging recently, so that very well could mean much better quality drives these days.
I think you're right that there was a merger, but like you, I don't remember which company it was that they merged with. So, all right, well, we'll have to do a little bit of research on reliability and longevity of those Seagate drives, but these look nice. I've been considering getting something like this, but I think I'm going to hold off because Scorpio's coming, so I think I can probably deal with my paltry 500 gig Xbox One S until this fall when the Scorpio comes out, which it better have a bigger drive than 500 gigs. That's going to be crazy if it's not.
Yeah, I would imagine it does. And I'm going to hold off because I'm pretty sure they don't make one of these in Humvee green.
You are correct. You got that Battlefield 1 themed Xbox One S last year. So yeah, you're not going to find one that matches that. That's not happening. All right. Well, it's another week. So of course, a new Deals with Gold and Spotlight sale in the Xbox store. This week, it's all about Call of Duty, like all of the Calls of Duty. That's how you would say that, right?
Absolutely.
They're all on sale. But because it's Call of Duty, none of them are like drastically on sale because they can basically charge whatever they want for Call of Duty and people will keep buying it. So if you've been holding out and waiting for some sort of sale on Call of Duty digitally, this is your opportunity because it really doesn't happen that often. So you're not going to get the latest Call of Duty for $25, but you are going to get it for cheaper than $60. So that's worth noting. For the second week in a row, NHL 17 is on sale again. Maybe not many people want to buy this, but I still love this game, and I convinced a couple of coworkers to go and buy it for $10. So go and buy NHL for $10, and we can play together. And then one other title I wanted to point out: this is an indie title called Party Hard. It is $4.29, and for that price, you can't hardly beat it. But you probably at least want to know what it is. This game, it's got a retro style to it. It looks like, do you remember Maniac Mansion or any of those other like point and click games, Richard?
Nope.
No? What about any of the Sierra games? Monkey Island?
Monkey Island, I remember because okay. I think it was on iOS.
Oh, jeez. So it kind of looks like those games, but the idea here, and this gets morbid in a hurry. You are essentially the neighbor to someone who's throwing massive parties, and you're sick of the parties. So the whole point of the game is to infiltrate the party and very sneakily kill everyone in the party without being noticed.
Wow, that did get dark fast.
Yeah. I've not played this myself, but I've heard that it's actually a lot of fun if you can get past the slight moral dilemma with that game, I suppose. So that's Party Hard. Again, it's only $4.29 right now. So that's it for our gaming news for the week. We have some mobile news to talk about, Richard. And that is that Windows Central has gotten their hands on sort of a leaked build of Windows 10 Mobile, and it's using a new technology for the shell. The shell of the operating system is like the important UI bits. So in Windows 10, the shell encompasses the start menu, the task switching stuff, the windowing, all that sort of stuff. And it looks like Windows has got a new thing called C shell, which is not like she sells seashells by the seashore, like C in the letter C, which stands for composable shell. And the idea here is that all versions of Windows 10 in the future will use C shell. So your Windows 10 on your PC will be using the exact same bits for the shell as it uses on other platforms, including Windows 10 Mobile, Xbox, Windows Holographic, everything. And this latest build that Windows Central got of Windows 10 Mobile was using Windows 10 C shell. And how you can tell is the start screen had a bunch of things in it that you wouldn't normally see unless you were on a Windows 10 PC. Like when you long press on a live tile, you get a lot more context options, and they're all the same context menu options that you would get on your Windows 10 PC, like the ability to turn live tiles off and use the extra large live tiles and things like that. So that's kind of interesting, but maybe not the most interesting. It gives you a new action center. So the action center that was in Windows 10 Mobile, not really there. Instead, it's replaced with the exact same action center that's in Windows 10 on the desktop. I've not used Windows 10 Mobile in a little while. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, that could be a bad thing, because I don't think the Windows 10 desktop action center has a shortcut for, in fact, I'm looking at mine now. It doesn't have a shortcut button for the flashlight, and I use flashlight on my phone all the time. So I don't know, maybe that's good, maybe it's not good, but it's interesting nonetheless. And then the other maybe more important thing is that it also changes how Continuum works. As a reminder, Continuum is the functionality in Windows 10 Mobile that allows you to dock your phone into like a USB-C dock that then has HDMI out to a monitor, and then the ability to plug in a keyboard and mouse via either USB or Bluetooth, and use your phone as a computer, because it then changes how the UI is displayed on the monitor. It doesn't just look exactly like your phone. That would be kind of ridiculous. And the big difference here with Continuum is it's windowed. Previously, you know, in the builds of Windows 10 Mobile that we have now, if you put your phone into Continuum mode, yeah, it looks more like a Windows 10 PC, but everything's full screen. Like, right. You can't do side-by-side windows. There's no snapping. There's no task view. None of that stuff with Continuum. It's just hit start menu, go to Word, and it's full screen. Then hit start menu and go to Edge, and it's full screen. So with the C shell, you can resize the windows. You can use snap view. You can do all of that, and it makes it much more like you're actually using a Windows 10 PC, which I think is a really, really good thing. I don't know that any of this matters, though, Richard. Like, that That's what I'm really struggling with here. Like, it's cool. It's a good step in the right direction, but it's a step in the right direction for a platform that no one's using.
Yeah. This strikes me as Microsoft's last desperate attempt to keep any life whatsoever on the phone platform. And to do that, they need to demonstrate internally and to developers that building for this platform will be no different than and no more difficult than building for any other Windows platform. And I'm just not convinced that that's the right direction to go. I have argued for years that Microsoft's insistence that all Windows experiences should be the same is incorrect. Different experiences on different platforms help users better use the platforms in the use cases appropriate and for that device. And one might argue that Windows Mobile's initial failure, the original Windows Mobile, Windows built on Windows CE, was that it was the start menu experience just like you had on Windows and an application experience very similar to what you had on Windows. I get that they need to bolster the support for Continuum if they want Continuum to be worth anything. But I don't think that means that they should make the rest of the Windows phone experience be like a shrunken down version of Windows. I think that's the wrong way to go. I think it won't work. It's not going to gain them any more acknowledgement or popularity in this space than they have now. And the only thing it's really doing is trying to minimize that bar that it takes to develop for the phone versus other platforms. Josh, you and I were just talking about that last night, that if you're building a UWP app and you want to target Xbox and you want to target the desktop and you want to target tablets, that's not all that far apart. But targeting the phone is a completely different animal because you have to rethink the UI. And you know what? That's not a bad thing. You should rethink the UI.
Absolutely. So I got into I had a small conversation on Twitter with listener of the show, Greg, and he was talking about how he thought that this was a pretty big deal, and that he was excited about it and said that Windows 10 Mobile is not dead, and this shows that it's not dead. And my response was that C-Shell doesn't fix the app problem. It's still dead. It's still totally dead. And his response was, it's not a slam dunk, but he feels that C-Shell is, it's a very clear indication from Microsoft that they're not walking away from mobile. And I agree. But my response is, Microsoft may not be walking away from Windows 10 Mobile, but the users and the developers already have.
Right.
It's not that they are, they already have. This is all past tense. There's almost no one using this platform anymore, and there's even fewer developers developing for this platform. It's a big, huge problem. And one of the things that I've noticed, and maybe the SoundCloud news story that we have here is a little bit against the point that I'm about to make here, but one of the things that I've noticed is we're seeing a much lower frequency of news announcements of big name UWP apps. Like, I've hardly seen any in the last 3 months.
Right.
Other than this SoundCloud app, I can't think of any. And if developers aren't writing for UWP at all, that's a really, really huge problem because it doesn't just impact Windows 10 Mobile, the OS that nobody's using. It also impacts Windows 10 and it impacts the Xbox. That's a big, huge problem that it doesn't seem like Microsoft has found a way to fix. And it almost seems like their continued effort to try to drive Windows 10 Mobile is just making this worse. Because like you just said, again, I don't want to spend a bunch of extra time making an app that's going to work on phones because it doesn't help me. Why would I do that as an app developer? Why would I spend any extra time at all to to target Windows Phone when no one is using the platform.
Right.
So if the big selling point of UWP is make your app once and it runs on everything, it doesn't run on everything because it doesn't run on a phone that anybody uses.
It runs on a phone that nobody uses.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. And I'll apologize. I know it sounds like we're bashing on the platform. We aren't really. It's just frustrating to see so many late attempts that, in my opinion, I think I speak for Josh as well, seem probably like not the best spend on Microsoft's part. What's the likelihood that they're really ever going to get developers, and in particular, those large name brands that have written now or two, maybe three different versions of Windows-based phone devices and ultimately just given up and said enough?
Yeah, exactly. So there's one more little quick point to make here, and that is that the other change that Windows Central found with this new version of Windows 10 Mobile is that Silverlight-based apps don't work. And if you're not a developer, you probably don't really know what that means. When Windows Phone 8 came out, and then Windows Phone 8.1 after that, they all used a programming technology called Silverlight. It was fine. There's nothing wrong with it. UWP is newer. UWP is better in pretty much every way. But lots of Windows Phone apps were written in Silverlight, and none of them will work now with this new version of Windows 10 Mobile. And the simple fact of the matter is, a lot of the best apps on Windows Phone never got updated from Silverlight to UWP because there wasn't a reason to do it. If you were like, if the market share wasn't increasing for Windows Mobile, then there wasn't a big reason for developers to go in and do all of the work necessary to convert their app from a Silverlight app to a UWP. So now you're going to make all of these changes to Windows 10 Mobile and make it so that some of the best apps won't work anymore. And those developers aren't going to come back and fix them. It won't happen. And yes, you are going to shut the door on a bunch of garbage apps. There's a huge amount of garbage apps that were written in Silverlight also. But every app store has that same problem of garbage apps all over the place. So you're going to have a much smaller functional app store and probably less good apps available to your end users. So,
and this isn't to suggest that that's the wrong move, right? I mean, we talked about this last week when there were rumors of whatever the next mobile thing might be likely won't support Silverlight. That's probably a good thing for many of the reasons that you discussed. It'll get rid of some of the crap apps. It will eliminate the need to have to support old technology. And we're talking really old by this point, right? So I think that's the right direction to go, but that does mean that the pool of available applications that could run on these devices is significantly smaller than what you can see that runs natively today on Windows 10-based Windows phones.
And let me just toss out the names of a couple of Silverlight-based Windows 10 apps, Windows 10 or Windows Phone apps that won't work anymore. WhatsApp, Slack, they're both Silverlight-based. Mm. They won't work on Windows 10 Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to get updated. They're not going to get updated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so that's really, really depressing. We should move on.
Why do we always do the mobile section is always so depressing?
I want it to not be depressing. I want it to someday be a happy spot in our lineup, but that's not the case for a while. But there's plenty of other happy stuff going on in the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, and we think that you should share the happiness with your friends. So go out, tell a friend about Entertainment 2.0, send them over to thedigitalmediazone.com, and make sure they click that subscribe button in whatever they're using to download podcast. Richard, let's move on to some other industry news. I'm a cord cutter. You're not, but many of our listeners are, and a lot of us are using the NVIDIA Shield TV in some way or another. I'm, of course, using it as my Plex server and my HD Home Run DVR server-y thing. I don't use it much for watching things, but if you do, you're going to want to download the latest version of the software. It'll be version 5.2, because there are a couple of important updates. The first one is that Plex Live TV stuff that we mentioned earlier. If you want to plug in some USB tuners to your NVIDIA Shield with this latest software update, you can do that. Of course, you'll want to check the list of supported tuners to find out which ones will work. But yeah, you can just plug tuners right into your NVIDIA Shield. That's pretty sweet. And then the other thing is, and I kind of thought that it already did this, but apparently it did not. Now you will be able to set like your Plex DVR and things like that to write directly to network attached storage from the NVIDIA Shield, because obviously the Shield doesn't have that much storage. You either have 16 gigs of onboard storage, which isn't enough for anything, or 500 gigs of onboard storage, which isn't really going to last you that long as a DVR and Plex server. So you can go external hard drives via USB or write to network attached storage now. So that's it. Quick update on the NVIDIA Shield TV. But there's also another new device to talk about.
Now, you know, periodically we've talked about the Tableau, and the Tableau is a product that we saw at CES a couple of years ago. It's a little bit of a different model. It's essentially a system that allows you to basically record on a device and then watch it from that device on a tablet, on iOS, on Android, on your television through a variety of different 10-foot interfaces. And they started producing new hardware that had tuners included. Well, they've come out with a new version called Tableau Dual that has its own onboard tuner. It's a dual tuner, as you might expect from that name. But what's more interesting is that while Tableau has typically been a BYO storage solution, this one comes with enough onboard storage that you could record 40 shows without having to attach external USB storage, but you still have the option to do that. So this really gives you more flexibility and allows you to just have this device alone in your entertainment center if you just need a basic ability to record shows and then watch them on whatever device of your choosing. And when I say whatever device of your choosing, it was easier for me to copy the entire list of devices that they support into our show notes than to try and recreate it. So I'm just going to read this, which is right out of the post about this update. You can play with the interface on iOS or Android devices. On the PC and Mac computers, you can use the web. You can use gaming systems like Xbox One and NVIDIA Shield, smart TVs, including the Roku TV, Android TV, LG Web OS 2 and 3, and other streaming devices like the Roku, like the Fire TV, like the Fire TV Stick, like Android TV, like the Apple TV, the newer generation, or the previous generation with AirPlay and Chromecast. That is crazy. Josh, I remember when we first saw this, the only thing you could do was AirPlay it to your Apple TV.
Right. Yeah, that's going to work with pretty much everything. They must really like Android TV. I think it was listed in there two or three times.
Well, because you can get TVs with Android TV built in, or right, you can buy Android TV devices. So,
right.
Now, yep, this device is going to be available. In fact, it is available now, and you can buy it right now exclusively at Best Buy in the US and Canada for just under $250. Remember that there is a guide subscription that you may want if you want the expanded guide information and the ability to record stuff in the future. So this is $4.99 a month for that capability.
Right, which isn't bad. I mean, that's still way less than like a TiVo subscription, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, that's really important, because without that subscription, you only get 24 hours worth of guide data, which makes scheduling things in the future really, really difficult. You're also going to need an antenna. And just to make this really clear, that one of the things that's really different about the Tableau line of products is there's no HDMI port on this thing. You do not plug this right into your TV. That's why it works on everything else. This is a headless thing. You could shove this in your basement, in a closet, in your attic, anywhere that you've got a network connection and access to your over-the-air antenna. It doesn't need to be near your TV. It just has to be on your network. And then you connect through all of these other things to actually watch live TV or the recorded stuff. So that's cool. I think this, the fact that it has built-in storage makes this a far more accessible product for people who are new to cord cutting. It's not like it's hard to plug in an external hard drive, but this gets people going a lot faster. And then they'll quickly discover, yeah, this isn't anywhere near enough storage, because I think it's only 40 hours if you're also having it do full compression of the shows. If you if you go uncompressed, I think it's only 20 hours.
Mm, okay. So,
yeah, it's not a lot of storage, not for DVR, but it, like I said, it's not hard to expand it. So cool, very, very cool to see that, and hopefully we continue to see more devices like that.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, that's it for our news this week. We do have one random thing before we get into our entertainment centers, and that's that this weekend, Josh, I finally had the opportunity to visit the Microsoft store in downtown Manhattan.
And how was it?
It's pretty cool. I spent, I would say, probably about 20 minutes there, roughly. I could have spent more if I wanted to really dive into the experiences, because this place is all about the hands-on. And they're pushing gaming and Xbox really hard. They have a ton of opportunities to get involved and try Xbox, to try HoloLens. I do at some point in time definitely want to try the HoloLens experience. They have opportunities to try different VR products. So up in the third floor, I think it is, they have a whole floor of just Dell stuff. And Dell is actually running that section of the store. Looks different than everywhere else. And they're promoting their Alienware and their different laptops and their desktop machines. But then they're also promoting their VR experience. And you can check that out. So really cool stuff. I got a chance to finally see the $130 keyboard that we talked about last week. It's very pretty. I'm not paying $130 for it. And I don't know if you realize this or not, but even though it's an ergonomic keyboard, it's Chiclet keys. It's probably right. The first ergonomic keyboard I've ever seen with Chiclet keys. They have, you know, less throw than you might be used to on a traditional ergonomic mechanical keyboard. But it looks nice. It feels nice. What caught my attention, though, was the keyboard that's much more like what I was talking about last week, the wired keyboard that I have, the full-size keyboard that I use, that's just basically a long rectangle with a full-size keyboard and keys for, in this case, Windows. Mine is for the Mac computer, but they have one for Windows, and it goes for $99.99. I was pretty impressed with that. I thought it was a nice-looking keyboard, and I didn't even know they had such a thing.
Yeah, I think they call that like the Surface Designer series or something like that. I think it's overpriced, and it's just a little flat keyboard that would hurt my wrist, so I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I think it's overpriced too. Now, one thing I did notice, because I was looking, we were talking about Windows Phone. I was looking for Windows Phone. You know what I saw a lot of? I saw a lot of Samsung S8s. So, you know, that's kind of weird, except that if you remember, one of the big deals with that phone is that they have a whole suite of Microsoft apps available and I think actually built into the phone. I think they ship on the phone. It's kind of interesting that they're so heavily promoting the phone, the Android phone, with their apps in the store. it looked like you could even buy it there, which I thought was just bizarre.
Right? What I've also heard is that if you didn't buy it there, but you have a Galaxy S8, you can take your S8 into a Microsoft store and have them do the full Microsoft treatment on your phone for you.
Got it. So that must be like a special edition that you buy there that has these on it or something like that.
I think so, yeah.
I saw one. Count them. One Windows phone. It's the Alcatel phone. It looked, it was okay. I was really hoping that they might actually have that HP phone. And
the Elite X3?
Yeah. No, they did not. And this is their flagship store, basically, right? This is like the big downtown store that they have.
Yeah, but I don't think the X, like, if I remember correctly, the X3, the HP Elite X3 isn't even sold in any consumer channels. It was intended for business customers. And so I think you have to buy it like through HP business channels.
I do know that. I just, for some reason, thought that, but it's the Microsoft store.
Right?
Like, I thought they would have it for some reason. So
there you go, thinking Microsoft to do something reasonable.
I know. Anyway, it was a nice experience. And so if you're in New York, I would recommend stopping by if you have a chance. It's on Fifth Avenue, just a couple blocks away from, conveniently enough, the Apple Store.
Which is probably where you went after here?
Which is exactly where I went after there. And actually, right now, the Apple Store is in a temporary location while they rebuild the main store. The glass cube that everybody's familiar with off of Central Park, that's been torn down, and they're doing something new and cool that will most likely look like many of their flagship stores that they have internationally.
Mm. Okay.
All right. Well, let's talk about what's going on in our entertainment centers. And for me, it meant, we talked about Plex, it meant getting Plex up and going again, because I got the news about Plex showing live TV, and I was really excited, except that, guess what? My guide data wasn't updating again. And so I ended up with some failed recordings. I did also have a problem with some failed recordings, because remember when I said I took my entertainment center apart and reconnected everything and got it all set up with the new receiver? Well, I didn't reconnect everything, apparently, including the external drive connected to my home theater PC, which is the target for my Plex recordings.
Whoops.
So that caused me to also not get some recordings. But now I have refreshed the data. Everything is working. All of the guide data is there. And I even reached out to the folks at Plex to see if they could help me figure out what's going on. Because I said, look, we're going to be talking about this. I want to know why this guide problem exists and how to get around it so we can talk about it. And they indicated that they had some problems with the guide just prior to the live TV stuff. Now that has been fixed. And if you're still experiencing this problem, the right answer is what I did before. I'm sorry to tell you, but if you're not still getting guide data, uninstall your DVR, reinstall the DVR. What that means is you'll probably have to go through and re-eliminate channels that you don't want included in your lineup. But then everything should work fine. You should get data properly now that they have made some updates on the back end. So hopefully that'll work for everybody. Seems to be working for me now. I also tried the Vudu disk to digital conversion that I think we mentioned a couple of weeks ago. This is a new feature in iOS and Android, I believe, where you can use your Vudu app on the phone to snap a picture of the UPC code on the back of the disk that you own in your home. And yes, they do verify that you are home when you are capturing this image. And if you do that, then you can essentially upgrade to a digital version for $2 for the same quality, or if you're going from standard def to high def, $5. It's a pretty good deal. It gives you the HDX version of the videos if you do the upgrade from a DVD. And that's really the only reason that I've considered doing it, is that things that I have in standard def, I can get in higher quality for just $5 instead of having to buy the full Blu-ray version and put that out on the Plex server. So it's kind of nice. I finally got it working. The process is clunky. You can't actually buy it in the app. All you're really doing is putting in a cart. Then you have to go on the web, and on your account on the web, then you go and you actually buy it. And then it sent me something to confirm through email that, yes, I'm allowed to, I really intend to buy these things. So I don't know if they're trying to, I don't know, circumvent kids taking your phone and just buying every movie that you have in the house and putting it on the Vudu service or what, but it seemed a little more convoluted than I thought it would. It was problematic to get it working too. I had an expired credit card on my account. I didn't realize that because I hadn't purchased anything from Vudu for quite a while, and it didn't give me an error that said, no, we can't do that because your card is expired. It just gave me an error that said, cannot process, try again later. So literally for a month, I was trying to figure out why I couldn't get this stupid thing to work. But now it works, and I take the stupid work back.
Oh, so that actually leads me to another question, because you've got a Plex server, Richard. You've got Vudu stuff. You've got iTunes movies that you've purchased and digital copies that you've redeemed through there. How does everybody in your house cope with all of this stuff being in different places? Or have you found a way to make all of this available through one interface?
Okay, so a couple things there. There is not really a good way of getting everything into one interface. It still isn't really possible. I have tried to now use the Plex, and I think I mentioned last week, we use Plex as the sole way of watching movies, more or less. The exception to that might be that if I have the option to watch something in a higher quality and I know that I can do that in Vudu, then I might do it there. But that means that I need to go to Vudu. The good news is I'm the only one that cares about watching something in a higher quality. So I can remember to do that, and it doesn't bug me to have to go into a different environment to do that. Can you get the Vudu copy into Plex? Sort of. So technically, you cannot. You can download high quality versions of Vudu content to your PC, but they won't play through Plex. They will only play in the Vudu app. So what that means is the only way that I'm aware of, anyway, to get Vudu content into your Plex server is if you use PlayOn to capture it from Vudu, and it will do it in HD, but it'll only be 720.
Right.
And then put that on the Plex server. And that's just really cumbersome.
Yeah. Yikes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Watch a little bit of TV, you know, just a little bit, the usual, too much. The Amazing Race ended, and sadly, the annoying team won. So that's over. This was actually really interesting. Like, there were two teams that I thought were not annoying, that I was hoping would win, but all three teams that were in the finals, I felt were deserving to win. And that's probably the first time I've ever felt that way. So a satisfying outcome there, even if it wasn't the one I was hoping for. Prison Break had its finale last week, I believe it was. I have my same mediocre kind of response to that. It was an okay story. It wasn't great. It could have been better. I enjoyed it. I will probably watch it if the rumored sixth season that might happen, in fact, does happen. Nashville is back. I was watching that. Spent some time catching up on Doctor Who over this past weekend. Still watching and enjoying The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And I am looking forward to a couple things coming up. The CMT Awards, the Country Music Television Awards, are this week. And yes, I like country music, and I'll be watching that. And also, Orphan Black starts up, and I am so excited about that.
Yeah, and this is the last season, right?
It is. This is the final season of Orphan Black. So looking forward to that. So with all of this content, one of the questions might be, Well, are you really able to keep up with everything? And no, the answer is no. Clearly, I'm not able to keep up with everything. So one of the things that I did, surprisingly, when I was working on my entertainment center last week, was I went through and I noticed that I still had recordings of Son of Zorn, which was a comedy on Fox that mashed together animated and real-life characters, and it was canceled after its first season. So, gone.
Whoa.
Deleted
it.
That's
unusual for you.
I know. I have single-season shows that I know were canceled that are still interesting to me that I want to watch at some point, but this just wasn't interesting enough, I guess.
Isn't Firefly the only single season, and that's not even a full season, show that was ever produced worth watching? I mean, what else do you have that's saved that was only one season?
Wow, good question. Okay, so I know I have the one season show The Firm, the television series adaptation from the novel. I haven't watched any of that. I know that I have one season of the one season show Alcatraz, I believe it was called.
And I vaguely remember that.
I haven't watched that yet. And I'm a little ashamed to admit that I already forget the name of it. We forgot the name of it last time. But that show, Terra Nova, the show where they escape Earth. I recorded it all and I didn't delete any of it, even though I only watched like the first two episodes.
Just delete it.
How about you?
Okay.
What are you watching? Is hockey over yet?
Hockey is not over yet. You're going to have to hear me talk about hockey being the only thing that I'm watching for one more week after this. It will be done by the time we record the next episode of Entertainment 2.0. The Stanley Cup will have been handed out. I really hope the Pittsburgh Penguins will be on the receiving end of that, but I'm not so sure after the last two games. So we'll see. But yeah, that's it for me. Between that and everything else that's going on, because it's summer and that means kids' activities get even crazier, there's not been any time for any new TV shows, any new games. Yeah, no, it's just hockey at this point. And that's okay. But I will be ready to move on to some other things once the Stanley Cup Finals are over. Because even though I love the NHL playoffs, it's long. And I am ready to do some other things. And committing to watching a three-hour hockey game essentially every other night, that's tough. That's really tough. It has meant some late nights with DVR'd hockey. And I would like to get more sleep. So in a week, that will be the case.
Cool.
All right. Well, Richard, you keep bouncing around to all sorts of podcasts. You got another one to talk about here.
Yeah, well, we didn't talk about any Apple announcements, even though this was the week of the big Apple announcements. They did have some interesting.
That's 'cause they weren't any worth talking about.
They did have some interesting entertainment announcements, but I'll be talking about those and other smart home announcements from Apple on this week's episode of Home Tech FM.
Lies, because there were no smart home announcements from Apple.
There were.
Yeah, that they're getting rid of HomeKit in iOS. Right.
No,
that's no.
You,
that's not entirely true.
Listen to Home Tech FM this week, and you will better understand what they're doing.
Yes. All right, cool. I will definitely. Well, I always check out Home Tech FM, but all the more so when you're on, my friend. All right. Well, that's it for all of our news and announcements and things that we've got going on. If you'd like to get a hold of us, there are a bunch of ways you can do that. We really like Twitter, so that's maybe the best place to find us. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at Digi Media Zone, DIGI Media Zone. If you're a Facebook kind of person, facebook.com/thedmz is the page that you can like. You can also check out Richard's other podcast. He doesn't just moonlight on other people's podcasts. He has another one of his own called Home On, covering, you guessed it, home automation news. Richard, what's going on with Home On?
Yeah, so last week you and I talked, I think we did this off air, and we talked about me recording the episode with the global head of smart home from IKEA. And I said that I had just done it. And you said, oh, that means I'm going to have to wait another week for the episode. I said, oh, no. I'll get it out this coming weekend. No problem. You know me too well, Josh. But coming up, a great discussion about the toy-free lighting product from IKEA and where they're going with smart home. So stay tuned for that.
Cool. I look forward to it, as do all of our listeners, I'm sure. And hopefully we will see you all back next week, because we do this show live and you can join us Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, probably, but sometimes it's a little different. So always follow us on Twitter, because we do always tweet to say if we're doing the show live, which is almost always yes, and if we are, what day and what time you can expect that live recording to happen. So be there next time, because it's a lot of fun for you and us. But that's going to do it for episode 410. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.